7.
Good morning. I am Yada, and this is Shattering Myths. Each weekday morning on the Genesis Communication Network, we expose and condemn the beguiling and the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, we'll open your eyes and change your mind towards each of these things, upon which most people foolishly and counterproductively cling. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you actually understand what is occurring behind the headlines. We're going to reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect yourself and your family, all while predicting how these events will shape America and the world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we will engage Yahweh on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with God's guidance, you will be able to replace religion with reason. Our phone number for those who want to engage in this discussion is 877-376-45. A few days ago, we read that tens of thousands of people were holding a protest in Cairo against the Egyptian president, Pharaoh is his new nickname, Mohamed Morsi, who last week granted himself sweeping new powers. He just essentially said that I'm the new pope. I'm the pope of Islam. I am infallible. No one can correct anything that I say, nor can anyone challenge anything I say. He became the de facto dictator of Egypt. But what you'll find is that there were at best 10,000 people in Tahrir Square, chanting slogans accusing President and Muslim Brotherhood, his Muslim Brotherhood, of betraying the revolution. The fact is, he didn't betray the revolution. There was this myth that this was an Arab Spring and that was ushered in the new promise of democracy in the Arab world is just ooky, just absolute rubbish. What happened across the Islamic world is the same thing that's been happening in the Islamic world now for 20 years. Muslims are becoming predominantly Salaf, fundamentalist. They are in every poll and every vote, choosing by a two-thirds majority the most fundamentalist Islamic candidates. They are choosing to impose oppressive Islam, Sharia law, upon themselves. There is no choice in Islam. Democracy is completely and utterly incompatible with Islam. Now, the problem that you have, because there's democracy is being bandied about in relation to what happened in Iraq, for example, in Afghanistan, what is happening in Syria, Tunisia, Egypt, Libya. The issue here is that we no longer understand the terms that we use because we have corrupted the very basis of reason, the very basis of understanding, the very basis of knowledge, which are words. Most people can't think, so they simply say, oh, democracy, good, therefore what happened in Egypt, good, Morsi hijacked the revolution, most people are good, he just got out of step with it. And if you do that, then you are completely misguided in this regard. Now, I've shared on this program before, there's only been two democracies in world history. Both were actually oligarchies. The most ruthless nation probably in world history was the longest living democracy. That was Sparta. Their economy was based entirely on slavery. Their power was based entirely on having a merciless military, and of treating their own sons mercilessly, and in the military, in this democracy, and in the economy, in this democracy, there was no choice. No one had a choice of which job they were going to do. No one, not even Spartan citizens, had a choice in which job they were going to do. And of course, most of the economy was the antithesis of choice. It was slave driven. And in the military, it was command and control. The U.S. military today mirrors the Spartan military. There is no free will. There is no choice. You simply follow orders. And so in the country with the longest-lived democracy, there was no choice. There was no free will. No one selected their leaders. As a matter of fact, democracy isn't about selecting one's leaders. It's about legislating. In a democracy versus a republic, the populace votes on everything. They decide everything. They decide, do we go to war? Do we fund a dam? Do we build a road? Do we invest in education? It's the people directly who vote and decide every issue. That's the nature of a democracy. It means the people legislate. In a republic, which is what America was founded to be, the people elect people who then legislate. They represent the people and legislate. And so we haven't a clue what democracy is. We just use the word as if it has a completely different meaning. Now, what actually happened is that the Muslim Brotherhood was elected in Egypt. And so rather than hijacking the religion or the revolution, Mursi, by declaring himself dictator, was honoring it. He was doing the will of the people. He was representing their will. Now, Islam means submission. That's what the word means in Arabic. Doesn't mean democracy. Doesn't mean choice. It means submission. Allah was modeled after Satan. If you read the Quran and study it in the context of Muhammad's life, reordered chronologically through the Hadith, what you will find is that every characteristic of Allah models Satan. Satan wants to be worshipped as God. As Allah, Satan is worshipped as if he were God by 1.5 billion people. What does Satan know? He is a fallen Malak. Malak are the messengers, the envoys, the spiritual regime that serves Yahweh. They do not have free will. So Satan knows nothing of free will, and so his religion knows nothing of free will. And this is why we have a religion named submission. The Quran even says to Muslims, since Allah has chosen your religion, you have no choice in the matter. The Quran and Hadith both say that when Allah chooses your leader for you, you are to follow them, whether they be a military leader, political leader, or a religious leader. You are to obey. You know, there's no Hebrew word for obey, and yet obey is the primary theme of the Quran. The article from last week says the president's decree, known as the Constitutional Declaration, so no authority could revoke his decisions. He became what the Quran inspires Muslims to accept, orders Muslims to accept. The Muslim Brotherhood, which supports President Mursi, said it was proposing its own demonstration and that it would take place on Tuesday. That would be today. Now, in this particular demonstration, rather than having tens of thousands of people show up and protest the oppressive tone, the dictatorial tone of President Mohamed Mursi's announcement, they supported him. But more than that, what they shouted, and it wasn't tens of thousands, it was millions who showed up. What they shouted is that we want the Sharia of Allah. They want to be oppressed with the most ruthless, the most disgusting, the most uncivilized law ever conceived by man, inspired by Satan, so you can understand why. It is laws based entirely on the words and deeds of Muhammad. And Muhammad was a rapist, he was a pedophile, he was incestuous, he was a sexist, he was a thief, he was a slave trader, he was a kidnapper, engaged in ransom, he was sadistic. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. So if you're going to comprise laws based upon that man's life, what you're going to end up with is Sharia. It is why Islamic countries governed by Sharia are the most hellish places to live on earth. Speaking of what followed immediately after the constitutional announcement for, it's called a constitutional declaration. At the time that this announcement was made, Egypt did not have a constitution, so it couldn't have been a constitutional declaration. But speaking of composing the constitution, there's a 100-person panel, 75 of whom are Salafist Muslims. About half were, little less than half, were from the Muslim Brotherhood, and a little more than a quarter of the 100 were from the most Salaf, most fundamentalist Islamic party, a party more fundamentalist Islamic than the Muslim Brotherhood. And so they comprised 75 of the 100 members of the panel. They could impose anything. They had even veto power had they wanted it. But about a quarter of the participants were Muslims, but not fundamentalist Islamists. They walked out, all of them. The few cops that had been elected walked out. The few socialists who had been elected walked out. The few moderates who had been elected walked out. And so now this constitutional committee designed to create Egypt's new constitution was 100% Salaf fundamentalist Muslims. It took them exactly 24 hours to craft their new constitution on Islamic principles, to impose Sharia law. The only thing that would create this window dressing, if you will, of fairness is that like the Quran, like Paul's letters, there's enough doublespeak in it so that somebody looking for hope could find it. You know, if you're going to take things out of context, if you're willing to discard the overall tone of the document and focus on individual statements removed from the context of the greater whole, you could find hope in it, and there will be journalists doing that. You know, for example, the document says that there shall be freedom of speech. Well, isn't that wonderful? Except they said, except in cases where applies to Islam. You cannot insult the Prophet. You cannot criticize the Quran. You cannot criticize Allah. If you do, you will be killed. Some freedom of choice, huh? There's even freedom of religion, but you can only belong to three religions. They're all stated, and two of the three you have diminished civil status. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Considering a series of articles on the turn of events in Egypt, which I portend to you is not a turn of events at all. Even when Mohamed Morsi relinquishes his dictatorial status, it will not be a turn of events. All of this was easily predicted. It was obvious once Egypt decided that they would vote for their new leader and for their new constitution that they would follow every other Islamic nation in the last 40 years, and that they would vote by two-thirds. They actually voted by 75% for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate.
You said something at the end of the last segment about how they couldn't say anything against the Prophet Muhammad. And I was just going to ask you a quick question. How is that any different than here?
That's funny. Yeah. It's true that if you criticize Muhammad here, even if you do so with evidence and reason, even if you're right here, you're publicly crucified in the media and by politicians, and then you're blamed for the death of people that you had nothing to do with. And so in America, for all practical purposes, you can't criticize him either. You know, here I wrote a book that is the most comprehensive presentation of the Quran and Hadith ever written. It is 1,000 pages, takes virtually everything that is known about Muhammad, and uses the chronological presentation of Muhammad's words and deeds as they're chronicled in the Sirah, which means biography, by Ishaq, and the Tariq, which is the history by collected by Tabati, to put the Quran in chronological order so that you could actually understand what Muhammad and Allah were saying. And when you do that, you learn that Muhammad was a revolting human being. I mean, he was everything that he was depicted in that that film, Innocence of Muslims. He was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was sexist. He was incestuous. He was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was a liar. He was a thief. He was just repulsive. And those negative themes dominate the Islamic presentation of Muhammad's life. Now, when I said those things, I received over 1,000 death threats as a result of them. So it's funny in that the world is so opposed to the truth that when you say things that are unpopular, the fact that they are true isn't an alibi, isn't justification.
I think the most revealing thing about it is that the only time you ever see Allah is in hell.
Yeah, one of the things that I noted when I was studying Islam, and I invested 10,000 hours, I really wanted to do a thorough job of accurately presenting Islam. After all, it is the religion of 1.5 billion people. And when I did that, one of the things that was, I guess, dealing with the Quran and the bulk of the Quran, there were two things that just jumped out that were undeniable. One is that in chronological order of the first 80-some-odd surahs, the primary theme is this argument where the Meccans, the people who knew Muhammad best, said, you know, you're a fraud. You're not speaking on behalf of God. You're self-serving. Everything you're saying here is because you yourself covet sex, power, and money. You know, you're demon-possessed. You're a nutcase. So the people who knew him best, far better than anybody today, said, no, you're lying. This, and all you're doing is plagiarizing the text of other cultures. Now, everything the Meccans said is recorded in the Quran happens to be true. And all Muhammad would do in retort would have his wannabe God say, oh, boy, I'm going to get you. You just wait. You know, I'm not going to get you in this life because I can't, of course, do anything. But in the next life, you just wait. I'm going to get you. And that was what I call the never-ending argument. It was just childish. But the second theme is that Allah is never depicted in heaven, ever. But what you find is that Allah is always depicted in hell, and the depictions in hell are all based upon what a orphan child might have expected in a depraved culture that tormented those that they were opposed to, that they didn't care about. And so you see skin being burned off. You see molten pitch being consumed. You see someone ripping the flesh off the body only to put it back on. And in the Quran, it's Allah himself that is doing all of these things. He's doing them to physical bodies in hell. And then he's restoring the physical bodies so that he can continue to torture them. There's something wrong with a God of torture who spends all of his time in hell. Shattering Myths. I find that this article has an interesting statement in it. You see, the current rift between Mohammed Morsi and the Supreme Court in Israel that led to Morsi assuming dictatorial powers was because the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Egypt, chose to dissolve the elected parliament. And they did so because they recognized it was 75% Salafis, that Egypt was no longer going to be a secular country, that it was going to become a theocracy. And they had all been appointed under Mubarak, and therefore were preferred being jurists in a secular country, and they were taught to be jurists in a secular country, as opposed to being jurists in an Islamic country, whereby the primary source of jurisprudence will be Al-Azhar University, the center of Islamic thinking, if I can use that term, associated with Islam in the world. And so they dissolved the parliament, and that put Mursi at odds with them. Now, here's a statement, though, from the this court. It said, and this is, happens to be the president of the Supreme Court. He says, the Supreme Court has been under fierce, unjust, and an organized attack by Mohamed Mursi. He says, since then, the Islamists have become under the illusion that a personal enmity exists between them and the judges of this course, and they have started having bloody revenge tendencies, and the desire for retribution has caused them to lose all sense of reason, to lose conscience, to lose morality. Now, can you imagine having the Supreme Court of the United States have the Chief Justice draft a letter and publish it regarding Obama and say that he has bloody revenge tendencies and a desire for retribution and has caused him to lose all reason, conscience, and morality, that he is delusional? I mean, welcome to the world of Islam. The letter from the head of the Supreme Court of Egypt concluded with, this court will not be deterred by their threats. It will not be deterred by menace or by blackmail. Welcome to the poison of Islam. Another article, this from the BBC on the same event, said the Islamist-dominated assembly writing a new Egyptian constitutional has convened to vote on the final draft. This took place 2 days ago. In one of the first steps, the assembly voted to keep Sharia or Islamic law as the main source of legislation. Now, let me make this point perfectly clear. Sharia is not the law of God. God does not have laws. The Torah is not law. The Torah means teaching and guidance. There is not a Hebrew word for obey. Islam has laws because that's what Allah, who is a guise for Satan, knows. That's what he wants. Islamic law, the Sharia of Allah, is based entirely on Muhammad's example. The Quran orders Muslims to follow Muhammad's example. It orders Muslims to follow Muhammad's orders. Now, Muhammad's orders, Muhammad's example, are not presented in the Quran. And so to be a Muslim and to follow Muhammad's example, to follow Muhammad's orders, you, by necessity, have to read, know, and understand the hadith. There are four collections of hadith that were compiled within 200 years of Muhammad's death. Only four. They are the Sharia, which is the biography of Muhammad, compiled by Ibn Ishaq. They are the Tariq, which is the history of Islam's formation, a collection of hadith compiled by Tabari, and the two topical collections of hadith, one by Muslim, the other by Bukhari. They can be used to put the Quran in chronological order, which is how Prophet of Doom was written, but they can also be used and must be used to illustrate the basis of Sharia, because Sharia is based entirely on the words and deeds of Muhammad. Hadith, which comprise these four sources, are the oral reports from Muhammad and Muhammad's companions. A Salaf, for example, a fundamentalist Muslim, is one who puts their faith in the words and examples of their ancestors, those who lived with Muhammad. That makes them fundamentalists. When you read the hadith, the overwhelming preponderance of the statements in the hadith have to do with things which are repulsive morally. They have to do with terrorism, with stealing, with kidnapping, with mass murder, with lying, with armed robbery, with sexual perversion, rape, incest, pedophilia. And so when you base your law on the example of a man who was this repulsive, you get Sharia. And it's why Islamic countries that are under Sharia are so hellish. It's why there is no chance ever to prevail in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's why a reformation that brings upon the will of the people in Egypt sets them backwards 1,400 years. In one of its first steps, the Constitutional Assembly voted, they used a democracy to keep Sharia or Islamic law as the main source of legislation. According to Egyptian state TV, the articles so far passed stipulate that Islam is the religion of the state. In other words, it is a theocracy. And that the principles of Sharia are the main source of legislation. The draft also says that Christianity and Judaism will be the main source of legislations, which means that the principal application of rules of what you can and cannot do will be applied to Christians and Jews because they have what's called a mini status in Islam. They have their wealth confiscated and they have no rights. They're treated even more poorly than are Islamic women. The assembly also adopted a new article that Al-Azhar Mosque and University, its authorities on Sunni Muslim jurisprudence must be consultants on all matters related to Sharia. Now, Sharia is going to be the source of legislation. So the Constitution is based on Sharia, and that the any decision on Sharia has to be approved, has to be get blessed by the Sunni Muslim clerics at the mosque and university of Al-Azhar in Cairo. It is now a theocracy. This story is the next. It also chronicles the same events that have taken place, all of which were predictable. Mercy's Muslim Brotherhood Party pushed through the 234 article draft in just 21 hours. Well, the reason they were able to do this in less than a day is because they simply said Islam is the state religion and Sharia is the official law of Egypt. Frustrated Coptic Christians and liberals earlier had walked out complaining that their views were not getting any consideration. Wouldn't have mattered anyway. Collectively, they only represented 25% of the assembly. Members voted on each article separately, discussed by objections by dissenters, and made alterations. While the articles, some of the articles sound somewhat democratic, the fine print indicates otherwise, some independence rights experts say. You know, this is the thing that really is upsetting. This was brought up post-game interview with Georgia Lost football game, but it's the exact same thing here. Journalists are so spineless. They're so ignorant. They are so irrational. They're so grotesquely immoral. They're so incapable of exercising sound judgment that they're not capable of doing their job and reading the Constitution and saying, well, you know, Sharia is based on Muhammad's words and deeds, and this is what Muhammad was like. This is a bad thing. They're not capable of reading the Constitution themselves and doing their job so that they can say that the references to democracy are window dressing. So all they can do is to say, while the articles sounded democratic, the fine print indicates otherwise, some independence rights experts say. It's not they say. It's always those guys over there, some people over there, that's what they're saying. I can't take a stand because I'm spineless. What's wrong? One of the many things that's wrong with the American media, the world media. What's wrong with politicians? Some people say. Moving a flawed, this is a quote, moving a flawed and contradictory draft to a vote is not the right way to guarantee fundamental rights or to protect the respect of the rule of law, said Joe Stork, Deputy Middle East and North Africa Director for Human Rights Watch. He told CNN on Friday that key rights are ignored in the draft. For example, it guarantees freedom of expression, but you cannot insult the prophet. You cannot defame the prophet, Stork said. Some freedom of expression. By the way, you know that during this time that Supreme Court of Egypt said that it was on strike because it didn't like Mercy saying that its verdicts didn't matter. They did actually continue with one case, and that was the case against the Copt Christians who insulted Muhammad through the film Innocence of Muslims. They condemned him to death, and his associates, those that they claim helped fund the film, they condemned all of them to death. Some freedom. This story, remember I told you that that no one was making this comparison, and this is the comparison that is the most important, that tens of thousands of people, maybe as many as tens, some say 20,000 people, marched in Cairo in protest of Mohamed Morsi declaring himself dictator. Well, 2 million man marches occurred over this weekend and into this week, all to bolster Morsi's support. These multiple pro-Morsi processions. Now, these are multiple 2 million marcher processions converged in the Tahrir Square area. The Islamists were joined by group of 18 other pro-Morsi allies. Most of these groups were fundamentally religious, and they all shouted the same thing. We want the Sharia of Allah. The people have no one to blame other than themselves. They did this to themselves. Hello, this is Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling toll-free 877-300-7645. I mentioned in passing that while the Supreme Court and all of the judiciary of Egypt was on strike, they still managed to prosecute some individuals in absentia. I'm going to share an article, Dateline Cairo. The news feed is the Communist News Network, CNN. It reads, seven Coptic Egyptians living abroad were sentenced to death. Sentenced to death Wednesday by a court in Cairo for their connection to an inflammatory anti-Islam film, prosecutors said. The suspects are being accused of being involved with the production of the film in California, said Abdel Al-Said, official spokesman for the prosecutor's office. Since the Egyptian citizens were tried in absentia, the sentence will only be applied if they return to Egypt. They will be killed for expressing their views. Protests against the Innocence of Muslim film erupted in September in many Muslim countries, including Egypt, Yemen, Tunisia, Morocco, Sudan, Iran, Iraq, Israel, and the so-called Palestinian territories. And so the filmmakers are being accused of being responsible for the savage Islamic response. The amateurish film, the article says, portrays the Prophet Muhammad. Now, that's true. It is an amateurish film. Now, what's amazing is that this journalist from CNN can make that statement, can call the film amateurish, and that's because that's a judgment, can make that judgment, but won't make other judgments. You know, it's interesting that with political correctness, working for a socialist communist news network, you can make a judgment and express your judgment against Christianity. Now, I'm not a Christian, but yet you can do that. But you can't make a judgment against Islam. You can't make a judgment against a secular humanist, but you can make a judgment against Christianity. So it says the amateurish film portrays the Prophet Muhammad as a womanizer. Yes? Well, the fact is he wasn't a prophet, and they used prophet here. Muhammad never issued a single prediction which he got right. Therefore, he's not a prophet. As a womanizer, Muhammad had in his harem at one time as many as 24 children and women, most of whom were sex slaves, slaves that he had, his men had captured on terrorist raids. About a third of them were children under the age of 12, some under the age of 10, some as young as 6. Muhammad stole his adopted son's wife. We call that incest. Muhammad had many children that he had consistent acts of sex with. That's pedophilia. Muhammad forced the captives from his terrorist raids to have sex with him. That's rape. And having some 20 to 30 women in your harem, that would make you a womanizer. 100% of the evidence contained in the earliest Islamic sources define Muhammad as far worse than a womanizer, but a sexual pervert. A buffoon. Now, buffoon is interesting. I've said that in future shows, I will read Muhammad's statements that show him to be stupid. I'm going to read stories that are just, I've kind of chronicled in Prophet of Doom under Islamic science and under stupidity. And we'll read them, and you can determine for yourself whether or not Muhammad was a buffoon. Buffoon carries a kind of clownish characteristics, and I would never infer that Muhammad was clownish. Some of his statements are so stupid as to be comical, but clownish, no. And if there was a departure between the real Muhammad and the Muhammad in the film, it probably would be on the word buffoon. They depict him as a ruthless killer. That he was. He led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. He ordered his men to kill. He gave bonus points when his men killed Jews. He one day drug 800 to 900 Jewish men out in front of him to have their heads cut off in front of their women and children. He was a ghoulish and ruthless killer, a mass murderer. The last thing in this list is child molester. When you have sex with 6 to 9-year-old children, you are a child molester. You are a pedophile. Why is it that CNN couldn't point any of these facts out?
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects